Well, good afternoon, everyone. I've got 2 o'clock. We will go ahead and get started. First off, if everybody could stand and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance. Before we do the ask Tracy to do the roll call, I want to welcome Kelly to her first board meeting. We're happy to have you on board and all look forward to working with you. Tracy.
Trustee Dye is absent today. Trustee Freckleton.
Here.
Trustee Holness.
Here.
Trustee Howard.
Here.
Trustee Quiatek.
Here.
Trustee Lloyd.
Here.
Trustee Levi.
Here.
And is there any public participation today? Great. With that, we'll move on to the consent agenda. Does anybody have an item they want to remove from the consent agenda for discussion?
Move approval.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Consent agenda passes. And with that, Dr. Labasa, over to you.
Thank you. And again, welcome, Kelly, to the board. Look forward to working with you. And we have a lot of exciting things going on. I'm going to start today with reading our resolution of appreciation for both Bob Davis and Sarah Doherty. Sarah unfortunately couldn't be here to join us today, but I'm going to read hers into the record. I'll do hers first, and then we'll do Bob Davis, because Bob is here, and we can do a cheer. So, Daytona State College Resolution of Appreciation. Whereas Ms. Sarah Doherty has been a longtime friend and advocate of Daytona State College and the Volusia-Flagler County area, recognized for her integrity and contribution to the college, the community, and the state in general. And whereas, through her work on the District Board of Trustees and sponsorship of our FAME program, which is the Federation for Advanced Manufacturing Educators chapter, she has been a champion of higher education and workforce training. And whereas she was appointed to the District Board of Trustees by Governor Rick Scott in 2017, whereas she has served as an appointed trustee of Daytona State College Foundation Board of Directors, and whereas she, under her leadership, Daytona State College expanded opportunities for students with world-class facilities, such as the L. Gail Lemron Student Center and the Student Resident Hall, and whereas she has supported the mission of the college to provide access and emphasize academic success for all students and has been a strong supporter of career and technical dual enrollment, and whereas she is committed to safeguard the affordability of a college education in Florida with a commitment to preserve the integrity of the state's 2+2 system, whereas she will forever be a lifelong friend of Daytona State College and the Florida college system. Now, therefore, be it resolved that this resolution of appreciation for Ms. Sarah Doherty is read into the official minutes of the September 22, 2022 meeting of Daytona State College District Board of Trustees, and that a signed copy of this document is presented at this time. So let's give Sarah a virtual come on up here, Bob. I'm going to do it at the mic here.
Oh, we're going to
center stage.
Center stage.
Okay, can you hear me okay? All righty. Okay, the Daytona State College Resolution of Appreciation. Whereas Mr. Robert Davis has been a longtime friend and advocate of Daytona State College and Volusia County and the Volusia and Flagler County area, recognized for his integrity and contributions to the college, the community, and the state in general. And whereas, through his work on the District Board of Trustees and as President and Chief Executive Officer of the Lodging and Hospitality Association of Volusia County, his service on the Board of Counselors for Bethune-Cookman University and the Advisory Committee for Hospitality Management and the Culinary Arts Program for Daytona State College, and he has been a champion of the community and education. And whereas he was appointed to the District Board of Trustees by Governor Charlie Crist in 2010, and subsequently reappointed by Governor Rick Scott in 2017. And whereas, under his leadership, Daytona State College expanded opportunities for students with world-class facilities, such as a soccer stadium, the classroom building at the Flagler Palm Coast campus, the L. Gale Lemron Student Center, and the resident and the Student Residence Hall. And whereas, he has supported the mission of the college to provide access and emphasize academic success for all students. Whereas, he has been a strong supporter of our hospitality and culinary programs. And whereas, he has been committed to safeguard the affordability of a college education in Florida with a commitment to preserve the integrity of the state's 2+2 system. And whereas, he will forever be a lifelong friend of Daytona State College and the Florida college system. Now, therefore, it be resolved that this resolution of appreciation for Mr. Robert Davis is read into the official minutes of the September 22, 2022 meeting of the Daytona State College District Board of Trustees, that a signed copy of this document is presented at this time.
Thank you. It has been the best ride of my life for 12 years to work under four different college presidents, to sit on this board and see the growth of this college, to have been with many different board members. Randy, please don't tell Farouk this. You're one of the best chairmen we have ever had in my 12 years experience. The professors, the people in this room, it's not us, it's been you. You have driven this college on to unbelievable, incredible heights. It's you, the employees, it's you, the professors, it's you, the administrative staff, that we get our names in the paper, but you do all the work. This morning at 7 o'clock, Cherise, I was in your neighborhood in Deltona, speaking to the Rotary Club. Strange as it may be, the Rotary Club of Orange City meets in Deltona. That's the way it goes. And the admiration that those 40 people had for this board and this college, for what you're doing in Deltona, Tom Labasso could become the mayor of Deltona. That's how popular he is there. And so, ladies and gentlemen, I say to you, I'm not going anywhere. I'm going to be sitting in the back kicking butt all the time, because that's what I do. I'm a Falcon. I will be a Falcon. But there's one thing I've got to say. I've studied all the community colleges in the state of Florida, 27? 28. And I look upon Tom Labasso. I don't know of one president in a community college that has 7 campuses. Do you know what a job that is? You know the distance he has to travel? You know the undying work that he does? It's incredible. Ladies and gentlemen, you have the best college president that anybody has, and the distance that he goes. And for that, I'm very thankful to have served under him. But one last remark, and then I'll get the hell out of here. You see this card? You all got it. And you all probably still have it in a box on your office desk. And you all probably show it. If Lynn Mercer was here today, she'd say, I'm a pain in the butt because I've ordered thousands of them. And everywhere I go, and every restaurant I go, every doctor's clinic I go, where did you get your education? The Publix kids that bag my groceries on Sunday morning. Oh, you're in Spruce Creek? You better go to Daytona State because we've got the best call. This is your calling card, all you people sitting around this table. Don't keep them in the drawer. Put them in your wallet, hand them out, and be proud. You are the PR people of this college. Thank you so much. But there's a picture in the post office.
Yeah.
Don't forget the foundation dinner's coming up.
Bob will always sell for us, that's for sure.
Thank you.
got a lot of recognitions today. And where is my... Right. I just want to take a moment to recognize is, and I hope I pronounce it, I Hancock, would you please come and stand for us here? And maybe I want to have you come up. We're going to do it by the podium. Let's go on the hot seat. Come on. Well, I'd like to, you know, recognize, you know, again, at the end of the day, you know, when we make our decisions, when we, as long as our decisions revolve around student success, we won't make a bad decision. So we're proud to recognize I today. She is a DeLand High School student who is dual enrolled at Daytona State College, is one of 2007 Phi Theta Kappa members nationwide who have been named a 2022 Coca-Cola Leaders of Promise Scholar. The Coca-Cola Leaders of Promise Scholarship Program is designed to help new PTK members defray the educational expenses while enrolled in an associate degree program. Scholars receive a $1,000 scholarship and are encouraged to assume leadership roles by participating in society programs. Selections are based on scholastic achievement, community service, and leadership potential. More than 900 applications were received for the award this year. Research shows that Phi Theta Kappa members are four times more likely to complete a college degree than their peers, said Dr. Monica Marlowe, the executive director of Phi Theta Kappa Foundation. The Leaders of Promise Scholarships recognize students for what they have achieved already and assure financial need isn't an obstacle to achieving their academic goals. Sancock is very active in high school, participating in varsity track for 4 years, the National Honor Society for 3 years, and ROTC for 2 years, among many other activities. Giving back to the community has always been something she loves to do, she says. She's volunteered for multiple places, but most important has been in the soup kitchen. And a 5K race has been her two most important volunteer activities. The race raises money for cancer research, and the creators were my elementary school teachers, she tells us. Volunteering has molded me into the emerging leader she is today. When she was 9 years old, Sancock was attacked by a dog and left with hundreds of stitches on her face. As a result, she is inspired to help children who have suffered traumatic injuries. Now dual enrolled at Daytona State and the University of Florida, she wants to pursue a career as a physician's assistant specializing in children's cosmetic surgery. I want to help, in her words, I want to help make a difference in children's lives, especially since I can relate to their struggles, she says. I want to show them that this is only one moment in your life, and it does not define who you are. Let's give I a round of applause.
I just want to say thank you for having me, and this is a really great opportunity that I will always remember. So just thank you for your time.
Okay. So is Dr. Castelli here? Hey, Dr. Castelli, stand up real quick if you don't mind. Dr. Castelli is the principal at Mainland High School, and I don't have my talking points on that. Do you have that? Okay. So I invited Dr. Castelli here because we just was informed that we received a $1.4 million grant to have an Upward Bound program. In order to do that, you have to partner with a high school. And Dr. Castelli was instrumental in that partnership. So now we have, as Amy mentioned to Kelly during her orientation, we now have all three of the TRIO programs at Daytona State College. The we partnered with Mainland High School, and it's 1.4 million over a 5-year period of time, beginning September 1, 2022. So we got some catching up to do. They gave it to us, and it started a few weeks ago. The TRIO program began in 1964. Its purpose is to increase college-going rates of traditionally underrepresented high school students, including low-income, first-generation students with disabilities, homeless, and foster care students. The program provides tutoring, counseling, mentoring, cultural enrichment, and financial economic literacy to 60 students a year. In the summer, the students spend 6 weeks in a workshop on our campus, including, and this is what we could never do before, is 2 weeks stay in a residence hall. So they get to see what it's like to live on campus. So we welcome our partner, Dr. Castelli, again, the principal at the high school, to celebrate this great opportunity for Mainland High School students. And we hopefully, you join us at as Falcons in the near future. And maybe get a picture of Dr. Castelli and I. Is Chris here? Or did he leave?
Tracy.
My left. We'll do a phone picture. These iPhones are better than you think. And Dr. Castelli's done a great job. How long have you been now at
my third year.
Third year. And, you know, they're the high school right across the street from us. Mm-hmm. And, you know, our dual enrollment was, let's say, not as robust as it could be. Under his leadership, we have the highest dual enrollment we've ever had from Mainland High School, including getting them into our welding program, which is amazing. So, you know, he's filling up our welding classes with high school students getting dual enrollment, and it's just what a thing for those students to have in their pocket as they finish their high school career. So thank you, Dr. Stone.
Thank you.
Okay. Next on, I have a full plate this time here. So the other item I'd like to discuss with you is, I think you have it at your desk, is our legislative priorities. And in the past, as what we've done, you know, we share this with you, and I'll go over them briefly. And it's not a voting item, but just a consensus that yes, we will move forward. And then we work with Southern Group to narrow them down. We typically bring 3 to 4, maybe 5, a year. And we will, as we finalize those, I'll bring them back to you. And you'll we do a nice brochure. You know, Kelly, we do a nice brochure. We have cards to hand out, and it's kind of what we go up to Tallahassee with. Briefly, the first one that we have discussed in the past, and this is in our CIP, and that's the capital improvement plan. It's important to be on that list to get funded, so we are on that list. That is, as you saw in the master plan, is to move our emergency services to the DeLand campus. So in addition to law enforcement, it's our EMT, our paramedic, and those other programs that are currently at the ATC. And this request is to, as you can see in the description, is to build that pavilion, tactical pavilion, to create a PT track, and also to create a driving pad so our cadets can do that training. Those will also be available for other law enforcement agencies to obviously to utilize for their training needs as well. That one is, I think the first two were pretty much on our CIP list, which is a big lift. And I think that those two would be something that we will definitely go forward with. So number two is the Palm Coast Amphitheater Improvement. There is, if you've been to Palm Coast, we've got a beautiful amphitheater. It has an open section that is grass. So it limits, obviously we're in Florida, when you have an event and the rain rolls in, it limits the capacity. So this will enable us to expand the capacity. It will You know, in Palm Coast, this is a big deal. It's a nice community gathering space, so that we can host more and more events for that community there. It also includes, as we talked about in the master plan, creating that two-way road. Because if you're not familiar with it, you cannot get to building 1 and 2 by car, or 2 and 3 from building 1. You have to go out onto the main roads and all the way around. So part of this request is to extend the roof and convert the grass to pavement or concrete steps, and to do a two-way lane to connect the campus. So that's our number two request. Number three is to improve on our degree audit software. A good degree audit software is really crucial to helping students stay on track for their degrees. So this may be something that we want to bring forward. The Center for Excellence for Entrepreneurship is another request. And I will say, if we don't bring these forward as a legislative request, doesn't mean we won't try to do them internally another way. This particular one is more renovation oriented. Maybe I'm guessing we would be advised maybe not to bring that one forward, but I think it's good that you see this, that we're thinking about this as an initiative at the college. Number five is the expansion of welding and relocating it to the ATC, as you saw in the master plan. This is not on the CIP, so this may be 1 year premature. Maybe something we would bring up next year. But again, we're going to talk to our legislative folks, and we'll get a handle on which ones we should look to move forward. And then number six is to upgrade our auto collision program at the ATC. We've had it for a long time, and we do really need to upgrade that. It includes, as you can see, new paint booth and some other items there. And our creditor has noted that the paint booth is outdated. So this is something we need to do. Again, this may be a good one to bring forward to the legislature. And then number seven is to replace some outdated simulators, patient simulators for the nursing equipment in Deltona. Because even though the building is new, we always ran two semesters worth of nursing in Deltona, so we have simulators there and they're old. But you couldn't finish the program in Deltona. Now you can be able to finish the whole program. So that's potentially another request there. So I know that was quick, but if there's any concern, you certainly let me know. If you're okay with the consensus, we will take this list and just kind of fine-tune it and narrow it down a bit.
Seems like you have
consensus.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. And other than that, just updates. It's certainly been a busy time since we last met. We had our fall welcome backs have all kicked off, so we've had great events on each one of our campuses, we've hosted the chamber eggs and issues, and we had Congressman Waltz on campus a few weeks back. We also hosted Bob's Lodging and Hospitality Association Awards banquet, and I think it was the largest turnout he's had in a very long time, if not forever. It was a great, great turnout there. And then, as you know, we did we got the check that we just presented there. And what's not presented in the check is the day before we did get there was an announcement that we received $1.3 million to get into CDL training, and that is an item here in the board packet for you to entertain. So good stuff, busy and good. So that concludes my report.
Great, thank you, Tom. Move on to facilities, but while you're getting set, just in case our guest leaves, but you're more than welcome to say, I just wanted to say, wow. I mean, I think when I was a high school student, I mean, she's a high school student, and the things she has already done, that's phenomenal. So
yes.
We say congratulations and wish you the best of luck.
Okay, our first item that we have is a final payment for our campus commons projects for Charles Perry Partners. This was the area, the parking lot remodel that we did in the area around student housing and some of the other spots on campus. So this is for final payment per statute.
So moved.
A second?
Second.
Any questions or discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes.
Good. The next item is for our SCIF that will be at the ATC. This is for the approval of the project budget. It would include the actual prefabricated unit, which is a sensitive compartmented information facility that would be put into the second floor of the building, a fiber optic line, and the construction necessary to support it.
So moved.
Second.
Any questions or discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? Motion passes.
Okay, and the last item is for Perry McCall Construction Company. This is for our student housing project. This would be approval of final payment. At the last board meeting, we released the final retainage. This is for final payment, and that would end their portion of the construction project.
Just information only, right?
Second.
This is information only, I believe.
Yeah. You're right. Thank you.
The Housing Corp.
Yes.
Yeah. The Housing Corporation approves this.
Yes. So you're right. So no vote. Thank you very much. I appreciate
Thank
it.
Thank you. Marty, Finance.
Marty already covered this with Kelly for you yesterday.
I appreciate the assist, Dr. Lavasso. Well, welcome, Kelly.
Marty couldn't be here yesterday, so I had to put his hat on.
All right. I got a few items today, and we'll jump right in with the financial report. This covers us through August 31st, 2022. You'll remember last month we didn't have a report yet, so this is always the first kickoff of the financial report for the new fiscal year. All right. So this slide here shows our operating revenue budget versus actual through August 31st. As you can see, we've collected now $12.2 million, or 44% of our tuition and fee revenue, $7.5 million, or 13% of our state revenues, $856,000, or 13% of our other revenues, and $1.6 million, or 66% of our board-approved transfers. By next month, that'll be 100%. There was a couple of transfers that we're still internally working through to get moved over. And then in total of our $93 million operational budget, we've now received $22.2 million, or 24% of that budget. Looking at it from the expense side, again, budget versus actual, we've now expended $7.6 million, or 11% of our personnel budget. Keep in mind, 2 months into the fiscal year, that's just over 16% into the year. So 11% is a little under. But pretty much normal. Moving down to current expenses, we've now obligated $11.2 million, or 55% of our current expense budget. That may sound high, and the sole fact is because of our encumbrances. You know, the departments kick off the year, open their purchase orders. A lot of them are blanket purchase orders that cover the entire fiscal year. So those funds get immediately obligated and encumbered. So that's the reason for the 55% there. As you can see just below it, $4.5 million of that is the actual expenses, and encumbrances account for $6.7 million. Moving down to capital outlay, we've now obligated $412,000, or 16% of the budget. Of that, $136,000 is expended. The other $276,000 is encumbered. So in total obligations, $19.3 million, or 21% of our overall $93 million budget. And if you peel away the encumbrances, we're left with $12.3 million expended at this point in time, and that's 13% of the budget. All right, this slide shows kind of a snapshot in time of our carry forward funds. You'll see at the very top is where we ended fiscal year 2022. That was $18.3 million in reserve funds in Fund 1 operating fund. Of that $18 million, what we show right below is the state required 5% reserve is just over $5 million. And the pie chart shows of the total $18 million what that represents. So that is 28% of the total. Board designated reserves is $2.4 million, and that represents 13% of the total. Unallocated reserves are $9.7 million, or 53% of the total. And then reserve for encumbrances and rollover funds is the final $1.1 million, and that is 6% of the total. So at this point in time, through August 31st, our net projected fund balance for if we were to end the year would be right around $15 million. This will also come into play in a few moments when I go over the carry forward spending plan that we're required to do each year. You'll see some of these numbers come back into play. Okay. This slide takes a look at our revenue received budget versus actual year over year. As you can see, the current year we've received 24% of our operational budget. Last year at the same time, we received right at 24% of the budget. So very consistent what we typically see from the college as the revenue streams come in from the state on a pretty consistent basis. Okay, this is our three-year analysis of tuition and fees. Very pleased to report for the first time, I think, since the COVID pandemic, we've seen an uptick in our tuition and fee and FTE enrollment. The in-state tuition line, the very top one, we've received $7.9 million, almost $8 million, compared to $7.5 million last year. That's an increase of 5% through August 31st. If you slide down all the way to the bottom there, we've now collected almost $12.2 million in total tuition and fee revenue, compared to $11.2 million in the prior year. So that's about an 8.2% overall increase compared to last fall at this time. It's a testament to everyone from Dr. DeQuino and Enrollment Services, what we've seen through Charisse and Elijah in student life, the sheer presence of the new residence hall, new academic programs that we've brought on board. I think those are all contributing factors to what we're seeing here this fall, which is very exciting, promising, and we hope to carry it through this fall and into the spring. Okay, this is the comparison of actual expenses to budget year over year. As you can see, we expended the 11% in personnel compared to 11% last year. Current expenses were obligated 55% this year versus 56% last year, and capital outlay 16% versus 15%. So even on the expense side, a very consistent spending habits year over year. Okay, shifting gears over to our Fund 7 capital projects. This slide represents all of our funding sources within Fund 7. Just kind of going down the list, the first item is the student capital improvement fees that are collected. That's one funding source. Coming down, our board designated reserves. Those are typically transfers that were approved by the board from Fund 1 to Fund 7. Right below that is a sub-account of the main board designated control account where they've been funded from the board designated reserve and we're still spending out of that particular bucket. Below that is the SunTrust loan funds. We have a little bit left there. We were hoping that we would spend that entirely last year. Some of the projects came in under budget. It kicked it back into the control account, so we still have some available SunTrust loan funds to expend this year. Right below that is our capital outlay and debt service funds. Those have grown over time. It's collected by the motor vehicle registration license fees, and so we each year add to that pot. Just below that is our PICO funding. Again, that's our state appropriations. It's ultimately funded from gross receipts taxes and where we get our major appropriations when the state does fund us. Right below that is state general revenues. That's a category that essentially is pass-through funds, federal HERF dollars were given to us for Deltona, and then the $12 million or the $13 million coming in this year is for the critical deferred maintenance program, which was also ultimately a federal funded program, trickled through the state, passed through to the colleges. So our allocation was the $13.3 million. And then just below that is a subaccount of the top student capital improvement fees. Anything that's funded from that major control account goes into a subaccount, and then we track it for purposes of monitoring and board reporting. This is kind of a much simpler recap of that particular slide. Beginning fund balance, we started the year with nearly $50 million in fund balance. We've now collected about $6 billion in cash and appropriations received. We've expended or encumbered $23 million. Of that amount, $11 million is expended. The other $12 million is encumbered. And fund balance per this August 31st reporting period is $32.8 million. Of that, 11.5 is committed, and the remaining 21.3 million is uncommitted. Okay. This highlights the major projects. So we, anything over, I believe, our $100,000 threshold will make it onto this active project report that we bring forward each board meeting. Currently, there are seven major projects with an estimated total cost of $29.8 million. You've heard about several of these today within either the board workshop or through Chris's presentation. The first one's the multipurpose field. That has an estimated completion date of November 2023. Daytona campus infrastructure improvements. If you recall, this we got started last year, so this is kind of a carry-forward project and continuing out this current year, but was funded last year. The Land Firearms Training Center, you'll recall we got received $6.2 million from the state PICO funding for that project. Master Site Plan, the board workshop kind of says it all on that one. That was so that's the funding for that project. Right below it, Cybersecurity Facility and Equipment. This is the one that the SCIF project that Chris just brought forward. Security camera and DVR replacements. That's been a multi-year project that's going to we'll see out until June 2025, started about 3 years ago, I believe. And then finally is the Deltona Classroom and Lab, expected completion date August 2023. That concludes the financial report, unless there's questions or.
Great, thank you.
Okay. My next item is what we bring to the board each meeting for informational purposes only. Any payments individually over $50,000, whether it's by check, ACH, or wire transfer. So it's just a listing of all such payments in the month of August. Okay. All right. And the next item is our Daytona State College spending plan. This is what I referred to just a moments earlier. This was new legislature, a new requirement that came on last year. If you recall, we brought forward our first spending plan. So what it requires is all FCS institutions must come up with a spending plan for any reserves in excess of their state required reserve. The thresholds and the requirements are dependent upon the size of the institution. Being that we're under 15,000 FTE, we're required to show a spending plan for our reserves that exceed the 5% state requirement. And this must be submitted to the board by September 30th of each year, so we always bring it to our September board meeting. It was in your packets. If you go further, we have a list of, stay right there, Trace. Here's the calculation of the 5%. There's the 5.1 million that I brought up earlier. It was a state required reserve. So anything in excess of that 5 million, which is in our case is the 12.1 million, we're just required to submit to the Board of Trustees for approval and then to the state for their approval, a spending plan that equates to that amount. Behind this was our spending plan with a list of projects. The majority of the projects, the first several, were items that were put into our June budget as proposed uses of fund balance. So they naturally would come as part of our spending plan in the current year. Aside from that, the sole biggest item, the 7.2 or so million, is really a contingency reserve that us and many of the other institutions are putting in place, whether it was a natural disaster, a hurricane, tornado, just to have some fund balance reserves on hand. We referenced the GFOA recommendation to have 2 months cash reserves on hand. I did the calculation. This is about 31 days of cash on hand, so we're not even at that level, but we thought it was important to put a significant portion into the reserve contingency plan. The very last item, the $1.8 million or so, is for our potential contribution of local funds for the Law Enforcement Training Center. We got PICO funded, but we may need to supplement that through some local funds, and we could tap into our fund winner reserves for that purpose. So if there's not any questions, this will require some board action.
I move to approve.
Second.
Motion and a second. Any questions or discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion passes.
Thank you. And last but certainly not least is our Daytona State College Housing Corporation audited financial statements. The Housing Corporation is a DSO of the college, just as the foundation. With that, each year we require an audit from an outside independent CPA firm. James Moore and Company is our auditors. They came in, did the audit for the fiscal year ending June 30th, 2022. This one, just for timing, has to be done very rapidly, so they kind of get in and get out so that we can include it in our college AFR and part of that reporting package. Takes a lot for my team to get them everything they want and need and ask for, but everyone does a great job. You'll see in the report that it was an unmodified audit opinion, which is the best opinion you can have. No internal control weaknesses or findings or deficiencies noted. So very, very clean audit. This was presented to the Housing Corporation as well as to the board chairs in the exit conference that we had recently. Again, this is for the board's review.
Questions, comments?
Okay. And I believe that was the last item.
Great, thank you. Thank you, Marty.
Thank you very much.
Move on to academic affairs.
Thank you and good afternoon. I was asked to provide a little information about our textbook selection process, so I will just go through that, and then I do have an item I need your approval on for our affordability report for the year. So when we go about selecting these course materials, it starts with the bookstore. Follett sends a notice to departments twice a year, January for summer and fall, September for spring, and tells us to get going on adopting the books, because it does take quite a few steps. Departments select books and materials following some guidelines that are in our faculty guidelines, which is a resource for all faculty and department chairs. We enter them through something called Follett Discover, and there is an important step where department chairs approve the final choices, and there's a reason for that because of several statutes that are involved in the parameters by which we choose the materials. Any change in additions within 3 years of original adoption must be justified in writing by the department chair. All of this is in statute and rule, administrative rule at the state level. So if we are going to change an addition, sometimes this has nothing to do with us. It's that the bookstore says we can't get enough secondhand copies to fill the need, so we have to change to the new edition, but we try to avoid it where possible. So there's a justification there. Next, also per statute and rule, faculty sign a certification saying that they will use the textbooks collected in the classes, and those are stored in the departments. They also must sign, if they're going to use open source or OER material, that says there's no book necessary. Per statute, the adoptions have to take place 45 days before the first day of class. The bookstore says we need it then 75 days before the first day of class in order to get them posted by the 45-day deadline. And the report that you are asked to approve today is where we attest as to how many were, quote, late. And I say, quote, late because there's there's some nuance to it, but we must have at least 95% of the books adopted by the state. We have never fallen below that number, so I'm happy to report, as you'll see in the report for you to vote on, we're at 97.2 to 97.6% adoption on time. Those guidelines say that departments should consider the following things: accessibility, ADA compliance, affordability, including the need to purchase access codes, bundle options, and whether OER can be used instead. And I'll just point out, it took us a little while to figure this out, but publishers will tell you that it's cheaper to buy the book in a bundle with an access code. It'll be cheaper to the students. So a lot of faculty were selecting that, even if they didn't really need the access code, which leads to a digital version of the book. The problem is the student cannot resell an access code. So when they go back to the bookstore with the bookstore says, I can't take it because it has an access code, you can't sell it back, which means you have to buy a new one next time around. So it once we kind of figured that out, we started saying, even if it's a little more expensive without the access code, the student can sell it back. So it's worth it if you're not going to use the access code. I know. These are the conversations that we all have about these books. Y'all look spellbound, but I'm just telling you, this is our world here. Appropriate pedagogical approaches for the class and the instructor. Is it the right book for that type of instruction and the ability of materials to address all the student learning outcomes that are identified for that course? So many departments adopt books using committees. This is common in, say, mathematics, where they will say, we are using this book for every section of algebra. Other departments let faculty do, we as a college let them choose individually, but a lot of departments pick one book for every section of the course, makes it easier. Courses like literature, though, it benefits the students, I think, to have some variety, and a lot of these are using more and more OER, so they're getting very inexpensive to teach some of these literature courses where they can select different themes. Also might appeal more to the student to select a specific kind of theme in say, a Lit 2000 course. More and more, we're offering rental options and subscription options. Again, the bookstore's access to sufficient copies is a factor. A lot of faculty will put a copy or two on the reserve in the library and also at the Hope Center, where students can use them for the semester. And we're going to buy a book scanner now that will allow faculty to scan in like one chapter of a book for students that can't yet afford their, you know, they're delaying buying the book. They can at least get it from in the library. We report general education textbook costs to you every semester, so it may feel like I'm reporting on books a lot. I am. This is also a statute, so we bring it for your review 3 times a year. We do the textbook and instructional materials affordability report, which is on the agenda for your approval today. That includes the methods used to reduce the cost and how many were late. All materials must be posted to our website for the prior 5 years. This is a 1,300-page Excel document that is on our website now. So it's the last 5 years of all instructional materials searchable by title, author, ISBN, course, and section. Starting in the spring, we will be posting, per law, a zero-cost materials special icon they're going to give us that will go in the schedule and will indicate when a course has no textbook cost at all. And with that, I would ask for your approval for the textbook and instructional materials affordability report.
So moved.
In compliance.
A motion and a second. Any questions or discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes.
Thank you.
And with that, we will move to the constituent heads.
Yes, thank you. Okay, so first up is our Student Government Association President, Adrian Tolles-Williams.
Good afternoon, everyone. So I usually have a very nice PowerPoint that goes with my reports. Today wasn't one of those days, unfortunately, but I'm hoping my cheery demeanor will make up for it. And before I get started, I just kind of wanted to echo some of Mr. Davis's and Dr. Labasa's sentiments with how much you all do for the students here, as a student and as a TRIO student nonetheless. When I started, I had no idea how I was going to do the whole college thing, but there's a whole room full of college full of faculty and staff and administrators and professors that go above and beyond to help people succeed and have been in my corner and gotten me to this point. So thank you for that. So in terms of the Student Government Association, with the fall in full swing and today being the first official day of fall, I am happy to report that we started our semester with about 9 students, and since then we have had new faces every single week at our meeting. So we have about 5 or 6 representatives that are just kind of feeling out the meetings and seeing what roles they think would be fit for them. One of those include the potential new role of a residence life liaison. That way we can have a student representative in our residence hall being able to advocate on the needs of the different students that are living on campus. In terms of the projects that we have on the drawing board so far, we are trying to continue the theme of encouraging civic engagement among our students. A project we are working on is a voter engagement campaign where we will encourage students to get registered to vote, get informed on the candidates they're voting for, and just making sure they know all the important dates, like when's midterms, when's the last time you can register to vote. Of course, staying nonpartisan, not promoting any arguments or discussions that are combative or argumentative, but just trying to encourage people to look locally when they are thinking of how to vote. That we'll also be doing a music night with some local artists to be able to bring some students together, especially our residents, with a movie night as well, a Pet the Puppy Day for the Humane Society, and then food and resource drives, ping pong tournaments for the students, because that was a really big hit last year, as well as doing some student versus faculty sporting events, whether that be kickball, basketball, etc. And so our overall theme for our projects this semester has kind of centered around fundraising, as well as getting involved in our community, both on and off of campus, and encouraging that community service aspect of our motto, because our tenets are pride, leadership, and service. We are kicking off our hybrid meeting model this year. I know I brought this idea to you guys in the ending months of the spring semester, so I'm excited to say that we have gotten our meeting owl pro, who I have named Owliver, and this 360-degree camera with different mics will follow us around a conference room and allow us to engage with a large group of people in one room, but we can use Microsoft Teams because all of our accounts come with Microsoft and we can connect with the other campuses. So this next phase of the meeting model will include trying to recruit more branch campus representatives and get more of a presence on our regional campuses. And eventually, once we have meeting spaces on each of those campuses, it'll make our meetings more accessible for students regardless of where they are coming from. So the student government will be filled with more student voices. Other than that, we have had the opportunity to sit in on Project Speak's presentation on emotional exhaustion, and we are looking for some other ways to get involved with different departments and groups on campus. That includes looking for volunteer opportunities with homecoming coming up through the foundation, the homecoming ball that our own Falcon Dance Club is throwing, as well as looking to help out in the athletics department doing whatever they need during halftime shows for games and stuff. So overall, and what I see as the end goal and the overall objectives of the Student Government Association and being a membership therein is personal and professional development. And this is something that will become a theme that I will talk about throughout each of the board meetings, how we are realizing which skills we are trying to build through the student government, whether that be communication, organization, accountability, and how we are able to build on that and translate that into employable, marketable skills that we will then, as we graduate from here, present to employers when we're trying to get jobs. As always, trying to promote self-advocacy and allyship, as we are not only students trying to navigate the student world, but we are student representatives and student leaders trying to advocate for our peers. So the overall goal for the student government this year will be creating a stable framework and foundation for future members of the SGA to be able to pull inspiration from and to encourage consistent reliability, creativity, adaptability, and confidence in their student representatives on campus. So that will conclude my report today, and go Falcons.
Thank you.
Adrian, do you have a moment to share your summer internship experience?
Yes. So one of the wonderful things about being able to report to the Board of Trustees is that I was able to meet Mr. Bob Lloyd, and through that I was offered a summer internship at the legal department in Brown & Brown Insurance. So I believe I have expressed to the board previously that my long-term goals include studying law and being able to advocate on different issues. And so through my internship, I have not only been able to take a series on professional development, but I have, through research and document review, been able to learn a lot about the insurance world and all its complexities. And I'm learning more every single day, and it's an incredible internship, and just being able to see not just what I'm able to do in my department, but the other departments within Brown & Brown. It is an organization that definitely has the grit, and it has, I am adopting the powers of B in my daily life, especially this semester. I am definitely being busy, so it is a great experience, and I'm going to be encouraging it to a lot of other students, especially at ATC and in the residence hall, just so we can spread the love and spread the joy and the knowledge. So,
thank you. Okay, Alicia Alexander can't be here. Did she leave me a report?
She's here.
Ah, never mind. You're gonna get the real thing. She made it. Great.
And the microphone is, like, working with me today. Thank you. Okay, so three quick things from the Administrative Council. The first is, I don't know if you guys know, but we're having homecoming this year, right? And so in partnership with the DSC Foundation, we're going to host our annual 5K run walk event. It's going to be on Saturday morning, 8 a.m., starting in the soccer field, October 8th. there's three ways to sign up. As you exit the building, you should see nice, colorful blue signs in the elevator and on the walls, advertising for the 5K, and there's a QR code that you can take a picture of and register that way. You can also stop by the DSC Foundation office, fill out a form, and register that way. And then also, there is a flyer floating around via email with a link that you can click on and register that way. So the funds raised from the event are for student scholarships. I believe this past year we issued roughly around $3,000 from the scholarship fund for students this year. So we are definitely making an impact for students and glad to be able to. I know it's kind of odd to say, we're glad to see that number go down, right? Because that means that students are receiving the money. So come out. If you can't participate, sponsor a student. It's $15 for a student, $25 to pre-register, and then $30 if you want to sign up the day of. I'll be participating this year because I need to. I'll do the walk part, but I need to participate in that way. And then we also have a volunteer sign-up sheet. So the route is different this year. We're actually going to expand outside of the campus. And so we need folks to help show people where to go, pass out water bottles, snacks, and to give encouraging words to those like myself who will need it to finish the race. There's a competitive portion of it, and then there's those, if you just want to do it for, you know, the benefit of your health, there's that. But yeah, I'll be with you. Yeah. So there's that part. The other thing that's going on with the council is we are holding elections. We're doing it later than normal, but the results are to come out the end of this month. So I'm not sure if I'll be here in November, but for whoever is here, if it is me, we definitely enjoy being in front of you all and be able to present the things that we're doing throughout the year. And then lastly, we have our greeting card signing project that we started in the spring. And then we did another round of it in the summer, and we're going to do it again in the fall. So if you're not familiar, basically there's cards that we created in-house that we get folks to come together, sign them. You can sign your own, or you can have a couple of folks sign a card. And we deliver those cards to the Council on Aging to deliver it to their clients who may not see their family members often or be able to get out often. And so this past summer, we delivered 500. And so we are planning to do that again and probably do it even more. And it's not specific to the council. If you know of any student groups or any other committees or organizations that you're on that would love to participate, we will give you a box of cards. Just go sign them, bring them back. We'll deliver it for you. And so, yes, that's what we have going on. So thank you all so much.
Thank you, Alicia. Great report. And then for our Career Employees Association, John Penny.
So the last couple months, we hosted a table at the Benefits Health Screening event. We raised some more money for our scholarships. This summer, we gave out 4 scholarships at $200 each. Awards, not scholarships, to 4 different students. We also opened hosted an open house during planning week this year, and we have John Brady agreed to speak to our next meeting, so we're excited about that, and that'll be held this just before the board meeting next month.
Great. Thank you, John. And for Faculty Senate, Paul Capps.
good afternoon. Welcome, Trustee Quatek.
Thank you.
I'd like to continue my practice of featuring a fellow faculty member instead of rambling on nonsensically in front of you myself. So today I present Professor Leslie Nadel, who's been teaching in the Bachelor of Science in Education program here at DSC since 2019. She began as an adjunct, but became full-time in the fall of 2020, yes, in the middle of the pandemic. She was offered an opportunity to work at the college full-time, and she accepted her current position as assistant professor. Now, she wrote me a very lovely biography, but I know we're on a very, very tight schedule, so I'm moving to the end. At Daytona State College, Professor Nadel works with both pre-service teachers and current educators and teaches ESOL issues and strategies 1 and 2, as well as children's literature diagnosis and intervention in reading and the reading practicum. Professor Nadel was our faculty fellow this last spring through the college, and that's one of the reasons I invited her here to share her experience as a faculty fellow.
So just a little bit about me. I've been an educator since 2006. Before I began teaching, I worked as an immigration paralegal for 6 years in Miami. So this whole international and different cultures really appeals to me. And I really like to explore, especially since the pandemic and we had to pivot and move a lot of the things from face-to-face online. I like to explore different ways and creative ways to deliver instruction and increase our student engagement, our motivation, and our student success. So I've done a couple of adapter grants when I was in Miami, and I helped write when I was at Miami-Dade College, the part of the censor grant. So I'm always looking for new ways, ideas to kind of make it more, make it more experiential learning. So one of the things that I wanted to pursue when I was looking at the Faculty Fellowship in Innovation is just, we have current and future teachers that take the class, and the class was fine, the completion and retention rate was pretty high, but I wanted to make sure that I was making the content more interactive. And with the help of Dr. Cohen and Aaron Sunday and Jasmine, and Erland at the Faculty Innovation Center, they really helped me get a better grasp of how to make my course more interactive, because it was no longer face-to-face. And so the same experience that I was giving my students in a face-to-face setting, I wanted to try to mimic that, but I needed that help just making that shift, making that, you know, pivoting, because we're really good with our content knowledge, but not necessarily instructional experts as far as delivering instruction online. So one of the things that we did was we made PowerPoints that were more interactive so that they were able to hear my voice and see me, and through our TV studio and through Screencast-O-Matics and things like that, we were able to just build on the course, make it more interactive so that they could see and hear the material. Sometimes we just ask the students to read something or look at a PowerPoint, and they don't always do that. So we embedded H5P elements in there, and just to hold the students more accountable for looking at the videos, listening to the PowerPoint, and having those informal assessments periodically just to increase that interactive and engagement, and then I can get that feedback to see how the kids are doing. So this is just an overview of the fellowship and how the FIC kind of helped me, just being more consistent with the fonts and with formatting, reducing the amount of material that I shared with the students, because I used to think that more is better, but it's not always. And I think I just streamlined it and was able to be more selective with the resources that I shared with the students. And so overall, the course, this is the first time I'm trying it in Fall A, so I'm going to get the students' feedback, you know, in a few weeks just to see how it's going. But we limited the number of resources, so we were more strategic in our selection. The interactive PowerPoints using Screencast-O-Matic, and then embedding these knowledge check questions using H5P. So my next idea is at the Welcome Back event that we had a couple of weeks ago, or last week I think it was, on Wednesday, I had some older students come over and talk to me, and I was manning the KDP table. I co-advised with Dr. Hensler, and I was next to my School of Education table because they go hand in hand. And some adult education students came over and they started talking to me in Spanish. And they had told me that they were teachers in their home country. And so that kind of got the wheels turning. And I was thinking, what a great way if we could partner the School of Ed with adult education and the ESL department. And I teach the ESL classes in our School of Ed. So I have a meeting with Carrie Verge and Roberto Duran next week just to kind of brainstorm ideas on how we might collaborate. And if we can't do something with my reading classes, which I teach in person, I could do something with the KDP, with the our Education Honor Society. So I'm just thinking about things like that, how we can collaborate. And there's a teacher shortage, I'm sure you've heard. And I was just thinking how we could partner with the adult education and the School of Ed and just kind of see if we can work something out. So we're brainstorming ideas next week. That's it, and thank you for having me today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. And last but not least, Billy Jo Dunaway for professional counsel.
It's like something you can count on, right? I'll be the last one. Today we had a lunch with professionals, a professional lunch, we called it. It was an opportunity for us to get together to network and get to know each other. In an environment where they could feel like we could talk about things, just getting to know each other better. So we have decided that we're going to continue this practice monthly just to help professionals get together and learn more about each other. We are looking forward to homecoming. Yay. We're going to have our door decorating contest, so it'll be judged during homecoming, so everybody should be getting ready to decorate their doors. We're also going to be continuing our Spotlight Award, so I'll be talking about professionals that we spotlight next month, or not, because that'll be November, so yeah. So November, we'll talk about that, and our next meeting will be September 30th at 11, and we've decided to keep our meetings virtual just because it gives professionals an opportunity to attend from all the campuses. And that's my report. It's short and sweet.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you. That concludes the constituent groups.
Great. Thank you. So just a few quick comments, and then I know we have a ribbon cutting ceremony or dedication ceremony coming up. Yeah. So first, Bob, one more time, thanks again for all your service. You know. Yeah. There was always three things you could count on about Bob. One is he was going to mention his baseball team on a lighter side. Two is he was always going to think about the students. And you know, I think we all do that, but I guarantee you Bob did. He was always thinking about the students. And you know, the third one was, I don't think I ever went to anything related to Daytona State without Bob being there. Like, you know, I don't care if it was a graduation ceremony, a building dedication, a board meeting, an event, or whatever, and Bob was always there. And you know, that says a lot in and of itself about how much he cares about this institution. So thanks again for all your service. A lot of exciting news, the grants. I mean, it's like every time you open the paper, you might see another big grant for Daytona State College. Mm-hmm. Tom, you and your staff just do a great job making sure that we're there, ready to receive them and then execute on them and do a good job. So as a board, we greatly appreciate that. Exciting news, Marty, to see tuition going up, and not because we raised tuition, of course, but because enrollment is going up. And that's just great to see it happening. You know, I think just on the note of people, I think when Len left, some of us worried, you know, how will we stay organized? But, you know, if you watched over here today, every time Tom needed something, it was like right there. And I feel like we haven't lost a beat. So, Tracy, thanks for all you do to keep us moving on. And Alicia, who I think had to sneak out, but if somebody will tell her to bring some cards to the next meeting, I'm guessing some of us would be happy to sign some cards for her card campaign. And with that, just once again, Kelly, welcome. Look forward to working with you. And I will turn it over to Vice Chair Holness.
As he said, today is both a happy day and a sad day. Bob, we're going to miss you. Thank you so much for your leadership. And Kelly, I look forward to working with you and getting to know you. It was also good with the master plan today as we begin to look at all the things that are coming and think back as to how this institution has just grown us. Talking to Tom, it'd be nice to go back and look at some of the older pictures to kind of see that the transformation that the campus has made. And I do thank you. I was the one that asked about the textbook. I just felt that when I looked at that information, I don't think anybody realized what the staff goes through just to pick out the textbooks and to keep the cost down. And I felt it was important that everyone hear that. So thank you, Amy.
Thank you.
It wasn't Gary's fault this time.
No, I took it away from you, Gary. It was me. I'll say that I was the one that asked for it. When I looked at it and I read that, I said, Tom, we got to bring this to the meeting. And people need to be aware of how hard the staff works to keep the cost of our textbooks down. And it's really appreciated. To talk about tuition and keeping the cost down for students, the cost of textbooks is one of those main costs that is so important. Thank you.
Thank you, Betty. Lloyd?
After all of that, what can I say? Bob, thank you very much. You've been a staunch ally and a good friend. And welcome, Kelly. Look forward to working with you. It's been a wonderful day. I mean, it wasn't too hot. It's not raining. And we have something that we got to do downstairs. But and overall, a very good meeting. And to you, Tom, your staff, you do an outstanding job. And like I always said, just doing things. Keep on doing it. Thank you.
Kelly.
Sure. Well, I just want to say thank you to everyone, the staff and the board, for being so gracious as I've joined in the last week or two here. I was born and raised in this community. I chose to come back and live here, and I love it here. And to get this opportunity to dive deep on with this organization is just a thrill. So thank you for having me. Thank you for being so kind and gracious. And I really look forward to serving. So.
Thank you. Bob?
All right, speed round. We're getting toward the end. First things, Bob, best wishes and thank you for all your service to this board and to this institution. And, you know, it would be hard to replace a Bob Davis, but I can tell you, knowing Kelly Quiatek, she is an outstanding addition to this board, and so really look forward to working with Kelly. Shout out to my colleagues at Brown & Brown. I have the privilege of working with Adrienne Tolles-Williams, and she's just the best. And she had this sort of interview process, little did she know, in her reports here to to the Board of Trustees. So it was a great opportunity to get to know her and introduce her to one of our other superstars, former SGA President Stephen Mixes, who's just thriving at Brown & Brown and doing a great job. And lastly, I took courses here as a student at Daytona State College. I may be the only one on the board. I also have my son who's taking currently credits at Daytona State College. So we're all in. So
good.
Yeah.
Great day to be a Falcon.
Go Falcons. Gary.
Somebody's got to take Randy's spot here today, right? Is it a succession plan for chairs of the Daytona Regional Chamber of Commerce to come on this board? Got like Randy, you, Kelly. Kelly, welcome. Seriously. It's great to have you. And, Bob, I was looking at item number four on our agenda. It's called public participation. Literally no meeting since I've been on this board since 2014 have we ever had that. Somehow I have a feeling that somebody's going to be asking for public participation. But you're tireless and your passion for this school, outstanding. Thank you. And it's great, because of being on this board, I got to know you so much better, and thank you. And I know my emails will keep coming, too. Don't want to forget Sarah Doherty. She was here with us for 5 years, and the impact that she had on this board, too. I know she couldn't be here today, but just want to say thank you and a shout-out to her as well. Textbooks, Betty, ditto. In the interest of time. Last couple things. Tim Norton has two big events coming up. I know we're not meeting in October, but want to mention the gala on behalf of Tim. Huge, obviously our biggest fundraiser, I believe, right, Tim, for the foundation. But also on November 16th at Plantation Bay Country Club, the Palm Coast Songwriters Festival is working with Tim and the foundation. We're bringing two of our hit writers in to perform. It's a dinner as well as a round of, I think these two writers that we have, Wendell Mobley and Lee Thomas Miller, have probably 15 number one hits, and Lee has a song that's just coming out as a single with Scotty McCreary here right now is his new single. And so they'll be performing at Plantation Bay. See Tim for tickets. And with that, Tom, as always, thank you to everybody on the staff for everything that y'all are doing. And Chris, can't wait to see that project at Palm Coast.
Great. Thank you, Gary. With that, we will adjourn the meeting. And
yep, we have our event right next door. It's right now a little hors d'oeuvres at the moment, so let's join that. And if you have some don't have plans for the rest of the day, we've got